Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 170 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episode 14 of season 7. It's called Sub Rosa. Directed by Jonathan Frakes. Teleplay goes to Brandon Braga. Story credit goes to Jerry Taylor. Aired back on January 31st, 1994. In this episode, Dr. Crusher attends her grandmother's funeral, spends time in her grandmother's haunted house, and is romanced by her grandmother's ghost lover. Anyway, Clay is here to talk about this one. Sub Rosa, it's kind of famous for being infamous, I guess would be the best way to describe it. But right after this, me and Clay are going to go deep on all that is good and all that is bad with Sub Rosa.
What the hell are you doing? Get out of my house.
I want to be so high and mighty with me, Beverly Hall Crusher. I spent more time here in the past 5 years than ye have in the past 20.
How do you know who I am?
I'm Ned Quint. I took care of your grandmother's house and her affairs.
Nana never mentioned you.
Oh, there's lots of things he didn't talk about. Let me get rid of that candle.
Why?
That candle has brought nothing but misery and bad luck to your grandmother.
Look, Mr. Quint, I don't know what your relationship was with my grandmother, but this is my house now, and these are my things.
That candle has been a curse on your family for generations. Now, if you have a lick of sense, you'll listen to me right now and do away with it. Now give it to me.
This is a family heirloom, and I intend to keep it. Would you please get out of my house? Now!
Howard women, always the same stubborn fools. I wash my hands of it now. You stay on in this house, and you keep that damn candle. I'll not be responsible for what happens.
Get out!
Clay, don't tell me you lit the candle.
Oh, I lit the candle at
you
both ends,
baby. You didn't
light
the candle. Never. Do not go to the house. Do not light the candle.
Did you ask me to do this one specifically because we're going to be doing Highlander next week?
It actually kind of worked out. I asked you originally because you've previously had experience with Space Irish, so I wanted to have a Space Scottish be a thing,
yep,
and then It actually just worked into the Highlander as well.
Yeah, bad Scottish accents all around.
I'm going to start off with Sub Rosa is clearly not a good episode, but
I take umbrage with that. I'm gonna put it right up front. I fucking loved this episode.
I think it's not a very good episode, but compared to sort of like the doldrums of season 7, like Liaisons, I had fun watching this one.
Mm-hmm.
Which is maybe a nice reprieve from what's going on. Like it's clearly terrible, and it doesn't really know what it is, but it's much better than your sort of run-of-the-mill average episode at this point in terms of watching it. So, yeah, what did you think of Sub Rosa, which I will say is always regarded as one of the worst episodes that the show ever did?
I do not understand that at all. I mean, to be fair, I don't know if I liked this episode because of exactly what you're talking about, because it was so different than the stuff I'd been watching. But I don't know. They just, I've been saying for the past handful of episodes, I wish they'd take more chances and get weird. And this episode is nothing if not an episode where they get weird. They get real fucking weird in this episode.
They get very, very weird. And
I never thought I would see an episode of Star Trek, let alone anything, that features the line, "I was reading a particularly erotic chapter of my grandmother's journal."
That was my second lead-in sort of to the podcast. I'd be like, "Oh, sorry, Clay, I was late, but I was reading a particularly erotic chapter from my grandmother's journal." Oh my god! I mean, it's I think it's just such an odd episode. Like, do you think this episode accomplishes? Like, do you think that it came out the way that the production team wanted it to come out?
I can only assume yes. I don't know what else they would have been trying to do. What do you think it didn't? Is there,
I don't know if they
you
were
know secrets.
I don't know if they were trying to go a little bit more of a parody. And I say that like one sort of evidence for that would be, you know, when the ship starts malfunctioning and the weather from Scotland appears on the ship.
Yes.
It's foggy. And Riker says completely straight faced, it just kind of rolled in.
on us. And he doesn't say it like jokingly. And I was sort of wondering if they were trying to be just, this episode is just trying to be funny. And it's not coming across as funny as more as it's coming across sort of like awkward in places. Yeah.
I think it's very possible that they were completely aware of how ridiculous this was. So having that sequence, I mean, I don't even remember much of the stuff on the ship because I wasn't really like, I was like, forget, I don't want to hear the technical talk. I want to hear more about the sexy ghost.
Ronan, the Wanderer. Yeah, and they actually don't spend a lot of time on the ship in this episode. It's really inconsequential what the ship is doing. You know, Riker's got to deal with the fog. Data has some problem with the weather. Machines aren't working properly. I guess we should start at the beginning. And a good place to start is just sort of, I enjoyed this episode just for what it like sort of gives me the joy. I like the Quint character. I think he's hilarious. But describing this episode is almost impossible to take serious. I was watching it, and I was in the scene where Beverly and Ronan are being confronted by Picard. Mm-hmm. And so Amy, my wife, comes in, and she goes, oh, did they go back in time? I was like, no, they didn't go back in time. She says, why are they wearing old-timey clothing? Mm-hmm. I said, because they're on a colony that models itself after, like, turn-of-the-century Scotland.
Yep.
And that alone, you know, I made it halfway through that sentence before being like, oh, well, this fucking episode is no good. She just kind of rolled her eyes and walked away at that point. But it's like, even the setup here is ridiculous. Like why Scotland to be modeling a planet on?
I think that's all part of the setup for the story that they're telling. Because what they're doing is very gothic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically a romance novel.
Yes.
But it's got a lot of like gothic horror stuff in it too. I mean, at the end when they dig up when Data and Geordi have to dig up the dead body of Crusher's grandmother, the coffin that they pull out is like lined with purple silk.
Yep.
And it's like a Hammer Horror Dracula coffin. I fucking love this episode.
And they don't react. They are not frightened at all when the corpse resurrects itself.
And then her grandmother comes back to life. This episode's amazing.
And so, starting from
how about the scene where Crusher's telling Troy that she basically got molested by a ghost, and Troy's like visibly jealous.
Although, I think the Crusher scene where she's talking to Troy, it's another in the long line of Crusher and Troy only talk about having sex with each other.
It's great.
But they use the words extremely arousing. The erotic chapter from my journal is what I just read.
Mm-hmm.
And then I actually couldn't tell if the Troy character was supposed to be embarrassed, because she cuts it off with, well, should we get back to our personnel reports, which is like a smash cut to back to
TNG. She's not embarrassed. She just has some things to attend to back in her bunk.
She's got a lot of paperwork to comb through. I think that, you know, aside from everything, the episode is actually interesting. Patrick Stewart is interesting in this one to me. He looks completely nonplussed in a lot of his scenes. Like he sort of looks like he's disinterested in what's going on. Although I will say he is the greatest actor of our generation, because when the opening scene, when the director was like, Give me a face that represents you being at the funeral of someone you barely know. He nails that look. Yeah.
He does. He has a look on his face like he's trying to remember what he wrote down on his grocery list or something.
He's thinking about
it while also holding in a fart.
he absolutely crushed that scene. And at that point, you know, Beverly has her house now. We meet Quint, who makes me laugh more than anything else in this episode. Quint is the Scottish caricature who comes in and basically is very upset. He knows about the candle, right? He knows about the candle, which is harnessing this ghost. He doesn't feel it necessary to tell anybody about the candle.
As far as I know, I assume that he knew about the candle in like a superstitious way.
Oh.
But I guess he was trying to
break the Enterprise.
It's unclear, because he knows about the candle, but he also said that the ghost was the one who was messing up the weather.
Right.
And then later on, he gets killed when he's trying to disconnect the plasma, whatever's from the weather thing.
Yeah, right.
So I guess he does know. I don't know why he would, but I don't know.
I don't understand why he would. Although I don't think he ever makes it plainly stated that he thinks it's a ghost or something like that. The actor in the script sort of play it off as if he knows what's going on. He delivers like that great line. He's like, "Oh, there's a lot of things your granny didn't know," or whatever thing he yells at Beverly about that. Mm-hmm. But he, for someone who knows the stakes of what's going on, he does not seem particularly able to get the candle away from Beverly, which I appreciate.
Yeah, he doesn't try that hard, really.
I'll say that if I'm going to criticize this episode as a TNG episode, I guess my major problem would be with Crusher, right? And that Crusher
looks fine in this episode.
She does look good. Her hair is glowing. She gives up sort of being a Starfleet officer, not literally at the end, but she does not approach what's happening to her in the typical TNG fashion, right? Which you need for the story. That is the only way that the story makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But she never whips out a tricorder the minute like ghostly things start going on. I thought that was a little bit odd.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I kind of gave that stuff a pass because I just assumed it was all part of the seduction angle. Like, I just assumed that any choices that she was making regarding this ghost were not... what's the word I'm looking for?
Like, not of her own.
Yeah, not authentic choices.
Yep.
To the way she would act rationally. I think it would have been nice if she had been able to defeat this thing by herself, or like, you know, if she had ended up getting enough of her mind back where she could realize something was going on instead of, you know, having a... Well, Picard doesn't really save the day or anything, but he kind of shows up and he's like, "This is not the man that you think that he is."
Right. It's almost her caring about Picard is what knocks her back into reality.
Yeah.
See, and I think it's kind of a little bit of a flaw about whether or not she actually is possessed by this thing, as opposed to just sort of smitten with him.
Yeah, I don't think it's possession. I just think it's like, you know, it's like the way that Dracula works, you know? Dracula has a certain control. Speaking of which, I thought that guy looked familiar. That guy plays Dracula in the Monster Squad.
The guy who plays Ronan?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, he's got the look, clearly, in the sort of the acting chops, I suppose.
But yeah, I think it's probably more similar to that, where it's sort of a an infatuation under the spell kind of thing.
Okay. So she's always of her own mind, no matter what she's doing. She's just kind of being influenced by her sort of love for this character that's appeared.
Yeah. It's stronger than that, though, because, I mean, like, it's not... I wouldn't say she's of her own mind exclusively. I just think it's... She's clouded by what he's doing to her, but she doesn't realize that she's being clouded by it.
Right.
Kind of thing. You know, it's like a mesmerism kind of thing.
Sure, sure. Huh. Yeah, I guess I don't know where I end up on that.
I would have to say that's the only way I can rationalize it, because... What it feels like is it's such a hard jump for her, where it's like, oh, I had this really sexy dream. And then, like, the next day she's like, I'm in love with this guy.
Yeah.
And then the next day she's like, you know what? I'm just going to quit here and go down to the planet because I found my grandmother's vibrator and it's fantastic.
I guess I agree with that. There's that sort of long scene where Ronan introduces himself by talking to her mind as she's like writhing around in her cottage down.
Yeah.
And like she never asks the Enterprise to like rescue her or anything. It's that kind of a thing. I don't know how when the possession comes in, and she never really... He's clearly doing something to her because she's doing that actor thing of like being banged into the walls, you know, and sort of like writhing around.
This episode during that sequence, it went from Star Trek and turned into like sexy Evil Dead.
Yes,
where they started doing like handheld camera push-ins and like she's like looking around crazily around this cabin, and you know, she's in the mirror and like the mirror's banging and stuff. It was good. I thought it was great.
It's got all the cliche. It's got the you look into a mirror and the guy's behind you, and then you turn around, he's no longer there. It's got all those tropes. Do you think McFadden did a good job this episode?
I think she did. the one place I think it falls apart is when Ronan shows up and like she's looking, she's either looking in the mirror or she's like looking out the window or something, and then from off screen his hand kind of sneaks in and grabs her by the face.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be like really, you know, romantic. But she just sort of, like, collapses into his hand.
Yeah.
And then he's, like, dragging her about the room by her face.
Yeah.
And it's just – I know it's supposed to be her being like, oh, she's smitten with the touch of this man. But it's just – it's really weird looking.
It's continuing the long line of sort of – like, Troy had that horrible episode, the loss – not the loss, the price, where she meets – Matt Murdock plays like the other telepath who sort of like seduces her or whatever. But that has a very weird scene where he, in The Price, Matt Murdock's character, maybe it's not Murdock, it's something, that actor, Lloyd Braun from Seinfeld, he...
Oh, yeah.
He comes in and he starts rubbing Troy's hair, and he like undoes her hair and sort of is rubbing her face. And it's sort of too forward of a sexual move to go on to somebody. And Ronan, I think, does the same. The show has a problem with that, and I want to get to, I guess I'll get to that later on, but I do want to keep talking about the details before we get into like the themes. So Bevan, Troy's conversation, bizarre, the first one they have where she explains that she's fallen in love with him, the erotic chapter from her grandmother's journal. Are you a little bit surprised that Troy seems very indifferent to what's going on here? Not very suspicious at all.
Yeah, well, yeah, she's not suspicious, but she's definitely not indifferent. She's definitely interested.
Maybe indifference wrong. She's very interested in the conversation. I was a little bit surprised she doesn't have any kind of impact on the resolution.
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense to have her involved, you know, because especially if Crusher is under some sort of mesmeric spell or something, then it would make sense that Troy would be able to sniff that out or something.
Right.
I guess she doesn't really have any reason to be suspicious, because the two conversations they have, one of them is, I had the sexiest dream last night.
Yep.
And then the second one is, I met this guy down on the planet.
Yep.
And I don't even think at that point does she mention at that point that it's Ronan? I don't think she does.
I felt like she had mentioned that
she mentions it to Jean-Luc.
Oh, that's right. Maybe I was getting confused. Yeah, she mentions it to Picard that he's like a 30-year-old, and yeah, okay. Maybe Troy does not know that.
Yeah, I could be completely wrong, but I don't think she mentions who it is to Troy. Oh wait, no, she does. She does, because Troy does give her that advice that they are both upset over the death of her grandmother.
And oh, like, right.
Bad decision. That's right. but either way.
don't let a bad decision like that get in the way of this passionate romance. Good advice from the counselor.
Either way, I mean, she's involved to the point where you'd expect her to be. I don't think she's overly involved. I think if you're going by, she's not overly involved or not involved enough if you're just going by the two of them being friends. But if you want to go by the fact that Troy is a, you know, counselor Betazoid, she probably should be picking up on something.
But
God knows, after 7 seasons, she hasn't picked up on anything yet.
Yeah, so she might just not be very good at her job, right? I think we have to take
maybe,
that
maybe
under.
That's what it is. Maybe the writing isn't bad. Maybe it's actually subversively really good, and it's just that they're writing Troy as terrible at her job.
She gets fired in the last episode. It's actually in the Bible. She's just awful at this. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of just funny sort of bizarre moments
in
this.
She's clearly just clouded by how pent up and horny she is.
Yeah. I mean, she's not the one who walks in on Beverly having an orgasm, which is such a I watched it again.
This episode is the best.
She didn't. Beverly Crusher didn't answer the door when Picard is clearly knocking. So I don't really know what to think about that. But he spent a lot of time knocking on the door. And I think Picard handled it as classy as you possibly could, walking in on someone having an orgasm from a ghost. He drops it immediately. He moves on to the next subject and doesn't really spend a lot of time on what the fuck did I just walk in on.
Mm-hmm.
The ghost lover. I don't know. Like, anything else you? There's a lot of stuff here. I guess I want to get into the themes. I don't know if you had anything else you wanted to bring up before we get into that.
I just love that I texted Tana about this episode.
Yep.
And when I actually wrote down what the plot of it was, it was extra hilarious because I said, let's see. I said, it's a weird episode. Crusher falls in love with a ghost who's been porking the women in her family for 800 years.
Yep.
And that's like, I'm not even exaggerating. That's
that's exactly what happens.
There's an episode of Star Trek that involves a ghost who's been sleeping with the Crusher or the Howard women for 800 years.
Yeah. What? Why is he doing it, too? Is that explained, or did I just miss it? He gets something out of their biomatrix, I guess, is the...
Yeah, something like that. I don't know.
He doesn't kill them.
Yeah, it's some sort of symbiotic relationship that he needs to survive. He needs a... like, whatever his species is non-corporeal or something.
Yeah,
they need they need a human host to live in,
okay.
I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, that's a great survival mechanism if he figured, well, if I just, you know... If I just act as like a sex surrogate to these women, it's no problem.
They clearly need it. No, I know it's like, yeah. He's been around. This kind of ties into my sort of general problem with season 7, where we're bringing up a lot of. It kind of ties into this, like we're bringing up characters that we've never seen before. Crusher's grandmother had been mentioned all the way back in season 1, but this is the first time we've seen her. Mm-hmm. So.
The rapping granny from The Wedding Singer, I might add.
Oh, is it? Yeah. I thought she looked familiar, yeah. And I think she's been in a couple of Adam Sandler movies, or am I confusing her with something? Maybe I'm confusing her with something else.
I don't know. Wouldn't surprise me.
She kind of reminds me of the grandmother from the Broken Lizard Beer Fest.
Oh, yeah. No, that's not her.
That's not her at all, no.
I don't think.
But anyway, the you know how they're bringing characters back in? Is it?
Oh, no, that's Cloris Leachman. From Young Frankenstein.
Oh, is it?
In Beer Fest.
In Beer Fest, yeah. Maybe that makes sense. Okay. So, I mean, do you think that the... is it a little bit odd at this point that this sort of relationship has never been brought up in Dr. Crusher's family before? Why does... Everyone clearly thinks that Ronan exists, right? So why does no one ever say how unusual it is that every female in the family has fallen in love with someone named Ronan?
Well, does... I mean...
Does he change his name?
Who else knows about him? It seemed to me that it was like a very on the DL kind of thing.
But he's been passed down between family members, right? So he's been with them for a long time.
Right. But I mean, it's not like Mama Crusher's going to pull Beverly aside and be like, oh, by the way, when I die, you're going to get screwed by a ghost and you're going to love it.
But I mean, she's...
Just go with it.
She writes it in her journal, so it's clearly not a secret, right?
I don't know. Journals are very private, Wes.
Yeah, she didn't lock it, and for some reason that made me. I think the most impressive thing about this episode is actually the new candle lighting technology in the 24th century, where you shoot the candle with a phaser. Did you see that one, Crusher?
I missed that.
Okay,
no,
Crusher
that,
lights the candle. She basically shoots it with a phaser and it lights.
Honestly, that's what I would be doing that all day with a phaser. You ever see the episode of The Simpsons when Homer gets a gun?
Yes,
and he's walking around shutting off lights by shooting them and shutting the TV off by shooting the TV. That would be me with a phaser. I'd just be shooting everything.
Set it to the
lowest. Put that on a low enough setting, a concussive setting, you could, you know, turn off a light from across the room.
Yep. And then you can always just pull the Riker if you run into some woman who needs to die, and you could just stop her ordinarily, but you decide to murder her out of cold blood.
Very, very slowly murder her.
So I think that – do you think that this episode is – do you think it's stylistically appropriate? Is this episode offensive? There's a criticism that the episode's offensive sort of towards women. And I was wondering what you thought about that, if that's sort of an interpretation or if the episode itself seems that way.
Well, I don't know if I'm the best person to make that call, but...
I think...
I would say if I had to take a swing at it, I don't really find it that offensive. I mean, it's like it's a romance novel.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't find it any more offensive than a romance novel. But then again, I'm not the one being offended. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
I think that it's I don't think it is, because like you say, I think it's playing into sort of tropes of the genre. And
right.
I guess it would. It does continue the series's issue of women being in women on this episode. The female characters, whenever they get into relationships, always kind of lose themselves.
Right.
Like the person, the guest star, whoever is who the male playing against them, always sort of dominates their story and their sort of like personality to a point. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of a problematic thing of the series. So I think it's just young male sci-fi writers who...
I think you're right, but I think this episode is different because the part of the ghost's thing is that he seduces women.
Right.
I mean, it's like Dracula.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of hard to argue with that. And also at the end, though Picard is involved with snapping her out of it, it's not like Crusher is a damsel in distress that needs to be saved by a guy or anything.
Right.
She's actively the one who is solving the problem.
Yep.
So yeah, I don't know. I mean, on the surface to me, I don't see why it would be that. What do they say?
Just basically that it's sort of like it's another in the line of the female characters sort of losing their agency because of a male, and it extends outside of this episode. It's kind of a problem of the series in general.
Okay, yeah, I mean, if you're looking at it as a whole, I can see that. But I mean, again, the point of the villain is to take away their agency.
Yep.
So the arc of the story is that Crusher is a strong woman whose agency is taken away by this symbiote parasite, and then she regains her agency at the end of the episode.
Yep.
You know, so yes. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't think it's particularly offensive at all. Why do you think that the episode is so poorly regarded?
Because it's not really a Star Trek episode.
Yep.
It's. I mean, that depends on how you want to define that.
Before you answer, I will say that looking through the trivia for this, one of the surprising things about it is that the writing staff generally stands up for this episode, which in previous times I've been surprised where I thought an episode was okay and all the writers hated it. Yeah. This one, they all seem to be like, well, you know, we were trying something and I thought it came out okay. Like, it's not like they think it's the greatest episode in the world, but they certainly aren't like, wow, I regret doing that. Like Ron Moore says if he could go back and do one thing, it would be not write Aquiel, the episode. But he didn't say that about this. So I don't know if that ties into your answer about why you think it's poorly regarded.
Yeah, I think I stand by the writers, I think. I think this is poorly regarded because depending on how you define what a Star Trek episode should be, if your definition is, you know, more hard sci-fi, you know, whatever, the standard Star Trek episode, then yeah, it's a terrible Star Trek episode. But yeah. I personally like it when shows like this with high concepts take the opportunity to try something weird and something different. And how does their concept and setup apply to different genres? I'm a big fan of when they decide they want to try that. And so I think this is very successful on that. I think it's a really fun mix of Star Trek and, you know, like a gothic romance. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you look at it, I was going to say objectively, but we're not going to get into that.
This is just as good as Best of Both Worlds, Clay. You can't
wait till we get to my rating.
You can't deny it.
I think if you look at this, if you try to divorce this from what your concept of Star Trek is generally, I don't think there's anything bad about this episode. I don't think it's poorly written. I don't think it's very poorly acted. I mean, compared to the stuff that they've done before, it's not poorly written. It looks really great.
Yep.
I mean, the lighting is fantastic. The set design's great.
It's Frakes. Frakes is the director, which I only noticed afterwards. But he continues to be solid in directing.
Except for the scene after the funeral where Picard is walking around with the priest.
Yes, as they're explaining the planet.
Yeah, they have to get all of this exposition out in like the 10x10 square set that they're on.
Yep.
So it's really awkwardly blocked where it's like they walk 5 feet along next to the church and they stop and talk for a bit. And then they walk down and just stand in front of a gate and just like look out the gate. So that's kind of weird. But generally, I think it's really well done and it looks great and it's directed well. Yeah, it's just not a traditional Star Trek story. And I mean, there's been episodes where they do stuff like this where it completely falls flat.
Yep.
But I don't think this is one of them. I think if there's anything about it that falls flat for me, it's the stuff on the Enterprise, because I don't think that stuff really adds much. It added to the mystery for me. I thought the stuff on the Enterprise was interesting because I didn't exactly know what was going on.
Right.
So them looking at the weather thing and all that kind of crap, just to, you know, put the technobabble stuff in there, actually was kind of interesting to me because I didn't – it was kind of playing into the other stuff on the planet, and it was a little bit more interesting than I usually find it.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I just think it was, I think it's a well-done episode.
I think it's probably similar to, like, Spock's brain in that they're both sort of a little bit too campy for their own good. Like, you can get a certain amount of enjoyment just from the sort of campiness of it. And I think that it's probably not as well-regarded just because it doesn't take itself as seriously. And I think that a little bit of a flaw of the episode is that the episode itself plays things a little bit too straight, I think.
See, yeah, I was going to say, I don't really find it that campy. I think they play it pretty straight.
Oh, really?
I mean, there's, for the most part, I think they do.
Well, I can't, Troy and Crusher's conversations are just, like, absurd. Like, they're a little bit absurd to not be done sort of comedically. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I get the topic is pretty ridiculous. I mean, well, I don't know. I guess it depends where you're coming from, because the initial conversation they have is not in and of itself a weird conversation to have.
Yep.
If you're just like talking about this really kinky dream that you had. I mean, it is weird if you're like, yeah, I was reading the hardcore erotic fiction that my grandmother was writing, and that just got me really worked up before bed. And then Troy's like, you should read two chapters next time.
Maybe you'll finish and it'll be great.
Yeah. But I kind of lost my train of thought.
Well, it's just that their campiness
of
it.
Yeah, yeah. The content is kind of ridiculous, but I don't really think they play it super campy.
You don't think the Scottish guy is
okay, that guy. Well, that guy, he's one in a long line of terrible accents.
He's practically got Lucky Charms spilling out of his mouth every single time that he talks.
That's true. Okay, he's pretty ridiculous. He is. Yeah. Well. Yeah. I guess it's a mix, because I think there is that campy stuff. That guy's definitely, you know, pretty campy and not at all offended. I just don't think they've ever met Scottish people. I think that's what they had in the back.
I think maybe, you know, one of the higher up executives had read like a really great book about like Ireland and Scotland, but had never actually been there. It's just like, you know, we should have multiple episodes that feature sort of Anglo ethnicities and just sort of have them living in a time where things were better, you know, make Scotland great again, I guess, over there.
But I was just going to say, to finish my thought, but the stuff later on is, I mean, it's they play it pretty straight. Like, all the stuff, the interactions with Troy and Ronan are played pretty straight.
Yes.
I mean, as straight as you would play it on, like, an episode of Silk Stockings or something. You know?
Right. Within context of the show, I think it works. I think it's just that I don't really have a problem with the seduction and the Crusher scenes and stuff. I think there's a lot of periphery that is really bad, like the Scottish guy. The weather on the Enterprise, Riker saying it just rolled in. Like, there's a way, I think, to make it more obvious that you're kind of having fun with the material. And I think they treat it a little seriously for that. It's kind of weird. I'm going to have a hard time rating this episode. Because
I don't know. I know what you're saying, but I think I would like it less if they played it more campy.
Yep.
Because I feel like you almost have to. You have to commit to this. It's so stupid and it's so ridiculous that if you're going to do it, you have to commit to it. You know,
you know what I'm actually wondering, like, would it have been a objectively better episode if, like, maybe Crusher was somehow separated from the rest of the crew a little bit, and, you know, like, she was on shore leave or something, and this was the thing that happened to her. I don't know what it is. I find a lot of the interactions with the other crew to sort of be a little bit weird, I guess.
To go back to what I said about it being like sexy Evil Dead, I think the story works more if it's a story in isolation.
Right. She has a reason why she can't get away.
Right. A reason why, you know, she doesn't have any external influences on the effect that this thing is having on her. But I mean, unfortunately, you can't really do that in a Star Trek episode.
Right. So. Yeah. They need to get everybody involved. Huh. I mean, yeah, I don't have much else to say. You want to go do final ratings and see where we stand on this thing?
Sure.
All right, guys, I'm going to play another great clip of Sub Rosa, and me and Clay are going to be back in a few seconds to explain our final thoughts and feelings.
You dreamt you were in bed with someone?
Not exactly. I was in bed, but there wasn't another person in my dream. It was more like a presence.
You said you felt a touch.
A pair of hands. They were moving across my skin.
Like a caress?
Yes. And there was a voice, a man. He whispered my name. It was as if I knew him. Or more like he knew me. He knew exactly how I liked to be touched. It was the most physical dream I've ever had.
Sub Rosa. It's one of those episodes, as they say. Well, I'll be interested here. I'll just say that this episode to me is kind of like, it's not 100% a great analogy, but it's kind of like Raiding the Room to me, that famous movie.
Oh, it's not that bad. Come on.
I don't think it's clearly not that bad because it's at least, you know, well produced, I guess would be the way to describe it. But mm-hmm. Why don't you start us off with what you think on our scale of 1 to 5 here? Would you agree that it's a tough, would you agree that this is kind of a rating with caveats to it?
Sort of. Yeah, okay. I'll give you, there's probably some caveats there because my rating is, I'll be honest with you, I'm on the fence between 4 and 5 right now.
Yep.
Because I just think this is a really, I don't know why, I don't know, all the stuff that they have, like the gothic stuff, I'm a sucker for that stuff. So, hit a check box for me. And I would never have thought I would see that in the Star Trek episode. Yep. It is so ridiculous and it's so over the top and so weird. I would definitely say if I was in a conversation with people about Star Trek and they were naming off episodes that you got to see, I would absolutely bring it up.
Right. Yeah. I think that says something without being specific about what you think. You know what I mean? Like it is definitely an episode that would be brought up amongst fans.
And if someone were to respond to me, oh, well, you're just saying that because it's so bad, I would not say that. I don't think this is a bad episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really interesting episode, and they really do a great job with it. I think it needs to be seen.
Right.
I just that's
be,
all I have to say.
To be believed, yeah.
Yeah, it's not. I don't like it because it's bad or anything like. Because yep. I just don't find it to be a bad episode. I think what the stuff that they do in it, they do really well.
Yep.
For the most part, it's just really fucking weird.
Yep. So you're sitting somewhere between a 4 and a 5. You think?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like I have to defend this for. I read up a little bit too, and it's very often cited as one of the worst 5 episodes in all of Star Trek, and I call complete total bullshit to that.
Right. Like, I mean, this is where my sort of caveats come into it, right? Because I think that this is nowhere near as bad as Masterpiece Society. But people seem to want to defend Masterpiece Society when I think that Masterpiece Society has, like, no idea what it's talking about. And even more recently, Homeward in mm-hmm. this season. The episode is terrible because it has no idea what it's talking about. Like, it has no idea what the concept that they're trying to even get across is.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's legitimately bad. Sub Rosa, they accomplished what they set out to do, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it can't be that bad in that sense. I'm sort of just torn about, I don't know what, the problem for me is that I enjoyed watching this episode more than any of the other episodes in season 7 so far.
100% agree with you.
But it screws up my scale because my scale is comparing it sort of to other episodes where it stands. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. This is definitely not one of the worst episodes that's ever been made. I would compare it. I think it's most like Spock's Brain, which is a sort of ridiculous, crazy concept that gets a little bit campy. But you can have a lot of fun if you just accept it for what it is.
Mm. I think this is more successful than some of the other high concept episodes they've tried. Like, I would say I might actually find this one more successful than, like, the one where Riker goes crazy.
Frame of Mind.
I think it might be more successful than that one. I mean, it's not as complex as that one is.
Yeah.
But, like, they lay down what they're doing, and they commit to it, and they pull it off pretty well, I think.
Interesting. Yeah, and I, going into this one, I know that this is, I sort of have a, I'm a little bit of a, I think I've mentioned this before, I'm a little bit of a contrarian in terms of conversation, just because it's the reason I'm not successful at talking about politics, because I never, I don't really stick to my own viewpoint. I more prefer disagreeing with what someone else is talking about, which is kind of a problem. But this episode is almost always reviled. And going into the podcast, I'm almost anti-joining that sort of chorus. And I think that I think it's fair to not join the chorus, which I'm glad about, I guess, to not just be another person who thinks this is one of the worst episodes that's ever been made, because, you know, Liaisons, I think, is worse than this episode.
People are saying that this episode is worse than fucking Angel 1. Angel 1 is still my high watermark for a terrible episode, or low watermark, I guess I should say.
Yeah, I mean, Angel 1 would be... People always say Shades of Grey because it's a clip show, but I sort of argue against that because...
Yeah, that's like playing a Joker card in poker or something.
Right, like yeah. It's not, you can't seriously... It's not an episode of the show, really. It's just kind of a jumble. Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed watching this more than pretty much everything that's come before it in season 7, which is interesting. I'm going to give it a 3 just to balance out, I think.
I mean, yeah, I think you know, looking back, if you think this is a bad episode, think about it this way. If you had to pick five or six episodes from each season to play, if you just wanted to feel like doing like a small retrospective of the seasons.
Yeah.
Would you pick this episode?
Yes.
As a season 7 one?
You would. You definitely would.
Then it's not a bad episode.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think that then that would fit into my Masterpiece Society, because there's no way I would ever pick Masterpiece Society. So I think that's a pretty good way to go about it. This would definitely be one of my top 5 if I was doing a mini retrospective. I think I would talk about this one. Huh. Interesting. Well, I don't think our conversation went the way I thought it was going to go, much like a ghost orgasm. But it was a long time coming, and we finished it up pretty well there. That's it, Sub Rosa. And I actually – do you know what Sub Rosa means?
If IMDb is accurate, it's like under the rose or something?
Basically, yeah, it means like in secret, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. I thought this was another episode that had a meaningless title, but that's not the case whatsoever. Huh. Interesting. Well, Clay, I'm glad you enjoyed Sub Rosa. I picked you up after, I think, Liaisons was your last one you might have done, actually. Gambit.
Gambit. Gambit, yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I want to tell you, I don't know what this says about me. I don't know how you're retaining all of this stuff, but all of those episodes that you were listing off in, like, referencing comparative to this,
yep.
I have no fucking clue what they are. even Liaisons, I'm pretty sure I watched that, but I don't remember what it's about.
Liaisons, yeah, it's the ones where the aliens want to feel emotions.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. Yep. Okay, now I remember that. But yeah, by name, no idea.
Yeah, no, that's TNG's hold on me, I guess. I probably can't do it for any of the other series, but... Guys, thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. If you're on YouTube, like and a comment, appreciate it. You can vote on what you thought the episode was, the 1 to 5. We'll probably see a swath of responses here, I would think.
If people who are writing responses don't think this is the greatest episode ever made, I will fight you.
Leave your home address in the comments, and Clay will come by and go Ned Quint on your ass. Did Quint give you kind of a Quinn from Jaws vibe?
I was wondering if that was what they were going for, but if it was, they picked the wrong aspect to lean into. Like, yeah, remember how Quint had that accent? Yeah, we should have a guy with an accent.
He should come in. Yeah. Didn't light the candle. You didn't light the candle. Didn't
it, is, it is a great lead-in. It is a great lead-in for our Highlander coverage next week. Mm-hmm. So if you guys enjoyed this, sign up for the Patreon so you can listen to us cover Highlanders 1 and 2.
Yes, we'll be talking about Highlander. And so obviously, as Clay just mentioned...
And then tweet at IDW and tell them you want me to draw the Highlander comic they're coming out with next year.
We'll get into it. Clay's very upset. He was not nominated to continue the Highlander comic series, but we'll talk all about that in the Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/thepenskypodcast. A couple dollars a month, you get extra podcast content. We talk about movies, things like that. We've done a bunch of movies so far, a couple episodes of TV shows, blah, blah, blah. Off the Beaten Path. Go to iTunes, rate the show, all that, all your favorite podcatchers. Facebook.com/thepenskypodcast. Join the conversation there as well. Guys, we're getting close to the end. And I will say, Clay, that this episode is kind of a pick-me-up. It was kind of like the smelling salts of the season so far, where yeah, I was concerned I was fading off into not doing justice to the end of the show that I want to do. And I think this helped me. It sort of gave me that sort of smelling salts in the nose, and I just sort of jerked back into jerked was a poor choice, but I sort of came back into where I needed to be. So I appreciate
that. Sort of just gently rubbed back into the way you were supposed to be.
Yeah, Amy kind of opened the door slowly after knocking for 5 minutes, and I was there just jerking back into back into context.
No, I mean, again, I don't know if that's why I liked it so much, but I think that's a big part of it, because it was such a big change. Like, when it started, I thought I was like, all right, here we go. There's another Star Trek episode. And then the ghost showed up, and I was like, all right, I'm back in. Sex ghost brought me right back in.
Good job, Gase McFadden. Good job, Brandon Braga. Good job, Jerry Taylor, for this one. It's interesting. It's a lot of good discussion about it. Guys, thank you very much. And Clay, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
And we will see you guys later, and we'll see you in a couple days. Oh, with Lower Decks. You won't be doing Lower Decks, Clay, but you should watch it in your spare time. Anyway.
It also sounds like a sex episode.
He left an upper deck and a lower deck here on Star Trek. Guys, see you later.